Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm continuing a series I began this year of interviewing directors. And this director is Jared Walker, who is not only a director, but who does, as he says, everything that can be done in the theater. But at the moment, he's directing a production of The Full Monty for the Players Theater in Sarasota, Florida. And Jared's story is particularly interesting for me because he is an example of a person who found inside of himself a person who might be different than his early training might have suggested he was or maybe even wanted to be. And so he had the courage to embrace who he actually is, which is a very talented, very flexible, very charming man. So not only do you get to hear Jared's story and Jared's take on directing, but you also get to hear some songs from The Full Monty, which are just wonderful. So hang on. Here come the show.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice. Oh, you really can. Deeper, deeper down you dive, where the child's gone to survive, finding wisdoms otherwise. Oh, you really can. And it's always there, like a silent hug from nowhere, sitting in my own soft lap, with all the time for us to chat, and my resources all on tap. Oh,
hello, and welcome to The Lynn Show. The Lynn Show is all about self-discovery. It's all about maybe the most difficult and maybe the most important thing that we can do in our lives. And that is to stop and ask ourselves, am I all that I am? Am I all that I could be? Have I accepted a version of myself that I came to believe as a child, that was supported and confirmed by the people I grew up around? Have I accepted this as the truth, and have I gone on believing that that is the truth and behaved as though it is the truth? And is it possible that it's not all of the truth, that maybe it's a portion of the truth, but that there is more to me, more that I can be, more than I actually am, but I have been so, I want to say brainwashed, so convinced by how I was treated, what I was told about myself, that it hasn't even occurred to me to ask, is there more to me? Are there aspects of myself for which, to use the technical term, I am in denial? Aspects of myself that I have kept hidden, and not just from other people, but from myself as well. I say in a lot of the shows that, you know, it's common, understandable, predictable, that we keep little secrets about ourselves, that we pretend that things about ourselves are not true. I remember when I was around 18 and I took my driving test for the first time, I failed it. And I was so embarrassed that I had failed it, that I lied about it. I pretended that I hadn't taken it. Okay, so that's a pretense about myself. But that is one that I knew, that I wasn't in denial for. I no longer think that it was important, significant, that I needed to be embarrassed about the fact that I failed the driving test, as I obviously am admitting to all of you that I failed my first driving test. And in fact, I had trouble with those damn driving tests forever. The written, not the driving test. The driving test I did okay, but the written. But I didn't understand then that my dyslexia had a part, I had a hand in that, because I didn't know that I was dyslexic. So that was something that I kept hidden from other people, but I knew about it. It was not something about myself, you know, the fact that I had failed the driving test, that I didn't know. What I believe today as a psychotherapist with, I don't know, more than 30 years of practice, is that many of us, maybe even all of us, learned in our childhood to suppress, to pretend, to dissemble certain aspects of ourselves which for some reason didn't go down well, was unacceptable, brought teasing or neglect or, my God, even abuse. So we learned first to pretend that these things were not true of us, and finally to become able to forget them, forget entirely that we were these things, or to believe that whatever they were, we didn't do them well enough. You know, to take another example out of my childhood, I remember early, I think they were arts and crafts classes, where we, I don't know, I think, or maybe they were in camp. We made lanyards, or we made, I don't remember what we made. Whatever we made, I didn't do it well. And so I came to believe that I had no artistic talent. I couldn't do anything with images or creations that you made with your hands. I simply believed this. I was in graduate school when I had to take a class, and for some reason that class required a number of artistic projects. And I remember I sculpted this little thing, and I thought it was beautiful, and it made me cry. And I thought, oh my God, maybe I am not an artistic failure. Maybe I have some capacity here. So, the Lynn Show is all about, to begin, asking the question. Is there something, maybe it's something I've always wanted to be. I've always wanted to believe I could be, or do, or say. Because, of course, one of the things that gets squashed a lot in childhood is self-expression. you say something and people laugh at you, and so you don't say it anymore. Or it's even worse than that. They tell you that you're wrong or bad or stupid or ugly or whatever it is, and so you believe it. You believe that you're bad or wrong or stupid or ugly. You believe that your ideas don't count. You believe that no one will listen to you anyway. You believe that, in worse than that, that they will tease, harass, punish, neglect, ostracize. So many things that we could be or do get first squashed, then denied, then hidden. And we lose any access to those parts of ourselves. And the really unfortunate thing about this is that quite often it is precisely the things that we have decided were not us in childhood that become essential, necessary to our happiness, our success, our comfort, our peace when we are adults. So I have seen in my practice people who think that they are ugly when they're not, cowards when they're brave. Just all kinds of things that are not true. Not true. And everybody who knows them knows it's not true. But they continue to believe these pretenses, and maybe you can see how that might impact a life. So that if you thought that your ideas were not important, would that keep you from speaking up when something really important that you knew and other people didn't seem to know? Or from taking part in a class, maybe that would cost you a grade where you could have shown, because shown, I don't mean S-H-O-W-N, I mean, well, maybe you spell it the same, shown as in the sun, sunshine, sunshone. I think that's right. Maybe you could have done really much better than you did, but you were shy or afraid or timid. So, first, to ask the question, is this something you always wanted to be but didn't think you could, or were afraid because you were sure you would be wrong or bad or something? Maybe even there's a quality that you have seen inside yourself. A lot of people have had to squash their anger. It's not attractive. Girls don't do that. Good boys don't speak out like that, or whatever, or I'll show you if you raise your voice to me again, or any of that. So, or maybe it is just, this happens a lot, a mother or a father will be saying, oh, that child, that temper tantrum, ugh, that's ugly, that's terrible, when all that child had done was express some anger, which, I don't know if you know this, but anger is a naturally occurring emotion. It is neither good nor bad. But if you are afraid of it or embarrassed by it, well, yeah, it can do some damage. So maybe you learned that you were never, ever to express any anger. Well, this is not rocket science. It's not good for your body. But it also means that it's possible that people are taking advantage of you, that you are being asked to do things that you don't want to do and are unable to protect yourself. So you can see that it is certainly possible that something that you had denied in childhood, but which you really have, might benefit you if you could recover it, recapture it, get access to it. So again, the first question is to ask, is there something? Oh, I started to say, you might be aware of your anger. You might feel it as a roiling in your stomach, or a raising of your shoulders, or a tension in your jaw. You might even hear it as words in your head, or you might even feel it as a rising in your temperature. But you don't express it, you pretend you don't have it, and when it has passed, even you have forgotten that it was there. So yes, it could be something that you are even aware of now, but unable to use. So again and again and again, the first question is, what? Is there something I always wanted to be, something I was afraid to be, something I think I am, but I pretend I'm not, or I forget? The first question, what? And then be on the lookout. Be aware of when that quality might be appropriate, when you might have used it, if you could. And then just notice that. No self-criticism. Self-criticism does not work. Just awareness. Oh, that was a moment when I could have spoken up. I had something really important to say, but my mouth wouldn't say it. I have a client who says that routinely. She knows what she wants to say, but her mouth won't say it. So, awareness, awareness, awareness. And I want to say something about self-criticism. We seem to believe in this culture that if we call ourselves names and tell ourselves we're wrong or bad or stupid, and that is somehow going to help us. It doesn't help, it hurts. We are better able to be our best self when our self-esteem is high. When our self-esteem is low, it's very, very difficult to be our best self. When you criticize yourself, you damage your self-esteem. You do it to yourself. So try and catch yourself in any kind of self-criticism. Okay, there's more information about this in my other shows, and you can find all of them on my website, thelynshow.com, thelynneshow, thelynshow.com. And also there's more information about this in my book, When You Can, You Will, Why You Can't Always Do What You Want to Do and What to Do About It. That also can be found on my website. I think you can even listen to the first chapter, because the book, the audiobook, the workbook are all up there. I am currently doing my entire private practice on the telephone, so if you're curious about therapy on the telephone, I wrote an article about that called Psychotherapy on the Go, and that's also on the website. Or you can go to the website, click on Email Me, and ask me any questions that you might have. So now the other thing I do in this show is interview people who make their living or their life with an art. And today's interview is with Jared Walker, who is, among other things, a director, and who has directed a production of The Full Monty, which is opening this week at the Players Theater in Sarasota, Florida. But Jared is more than a director. I think I say in the e-blast that if you can do it in the theater, Jared can do it. So he has a lot to say about everything that is related to theater. And I am also playing in this interview a couple of songs from The Full Monty to give you even a better taste of this delightful show. If you haven't seen the movie or seen the play or heard about it, you really want to. It's just delightful. Anyway, I will let Jared talk more about that, but mostly about his interesting life. And so here, I think before I play his interview, I'm going to play one of the songs from The Full Monty, and then the interview with Jared.
You're out of work, your pride is missing. They call you jerk, but you don't listen. You haven't got a pot to piss in, but you're a man. Your hands are rough, your back is hairy, your talk is tough, your smell is scary. Here's what you're not: you're not a fairy. No, you're a beer drinking real life man. When the beef comes out, you do the carving. You hate Tom Cruise, but you love Lee Marvin. You're a man, and that's a bonus. Cause when you're swing and you're cojones, you'll show them what testosterone is. Cause you're a boot-wearing, beer-drinking, Chevy-driving man. Don't
Don't do it to be the most talked about man in Buffalo. Don't do it for all the money you're gonna rake in. Don't even do it so your best friend can keep seeing his son, whom he loves more than life. Oh no, do it for yourself, Davy boy. Show yourself the stuff you're made of. Don't show me. You get these plans, they always fail. You've been divorced, you've been to jail. You may be bold, you may be male, but you're a bum, bum, ba-dat, bum. You got your dreams, you got your wishes, and I don't want to sound malicious, but you're a nut, and I got dishes. I'm going home. See ya.
You walk away now, but you'll be back. You know, you're always there for me.
Not this time, Fabio. Jerry the stripper.
Surf's up, ladies. Here comes Lukowski, the big kahuna, riding your pipeline. I'm hanging 10.
Stand back, ladies, it's quarterback Jerry, throwing a long ball right into your end zone. Touchdown, wanna go for two? Bases loaded, it's bad boy Jerry, swinging a big old bat. Bup, 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 banging one right at you, baby. Booyah!
I'm gonna jump straight up, kick a hole in the moon. Don't know exactly where.
Here with Jared Walker in a small rehearsal space at the Players Theater, where he will be directing The Full Monty.
The Full Monty.
The Full Monty, exactly right. Okay. I interview people who make their living or their life with an art.
Okay.
I'm making the assumption that the art that you make your life and or living with is theater.
Yes.
Now, I know you're directing The Full Monty, but you do other things in the theater.
Plenty of other things.
Yes. Yes.
Whatever it takes to make a buck.
So you're an actor?
Yes, actor first.
And?
I'm an actor with Equity. Just kind of come to a little bit a slower halt acting because mostly we get most of our work from the Golden Apple here in town.
Yes.
Which, of course, yes. Went non-equity about 2 years ago.
Right.
So we've really had to look at other ways of making income.
Ah, yes. Okay, so what are the other things you do?
I direct.
Yes, right.
I do choreography.
You do?
Yes, if it's in my my body, my knowledge.
Well,
if it's something more balletic or something like that, of course, I would look for another choreographer.
Are you there's choreography in...
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Are you choreographing as well?
I
wow.
Yeah.
Oh, the triple threat here.
Yes, a little bit.
A little bit.
Consider myself an actor first. Directing just came as a very natural thing to me. It doesn't, to a lot of actors, it's not necessarily
actor
doesn't make you a good director. But, I was an A-plus student in college. I was stunned my first semester when I had, gotten a perfect, score in class, you know. That doesn't happen to me.
Well, okay, wait, because I want to ask you my question now.
Okay.
So the question is, how did this life in the theater begin? And I don't mean when you got your first job. Really, the very first time it occurred to you, I make people laugh, people like to look at me, I like them to look at me, I'm whatever it is. Do you understand what I'm asking?
Yes, of
okay,
course.
Good.
When I was seven, my mother decided to put me into piano class.
Mm-hmm.
I already loved to sing, you know, in church and stuff with my mother. Singing was something I enjoyed from an early age. My sister, older sister, 18 years older.
18 years?
18 years older, yes. I had an 18-year-old, 14-year-older, and my brother was 12 years older. Came very late.
Wow.
So it was kind of like being an only child.
No kidding.
But my sister used to listen to a lot of the 60s music, and she would shimmy and shake in front of me, so I would start to move and things like that. So they saw a love for music for me and started me a piano. When I was probably a year later, I got cast in my first musical in a lead in a third grade musical.
You're eight.
Yes, I was eight. So
what was the show?
It was called The Glum Bunny Dilemma. It was an Easter musical with Glum Bunny becoming Sunny Bunny.
Very nice. Were you Glum Bunny?
I was Glum Bunny. So, I mean, then that came as a huge surprise to me. And, of course, my love for the theater and theatrics grew from there.
Now, this is interesting to me. This was a class play or a school play?
A school play,
so you must have auditioned.
Oh, yes. Amongst 300, 400 of the kids.
Wow.
It's very much like, it's kind of full circle now because I'm also directing the Aristocats over for Southside School over on Weber.
So you know how they all feel.
Exactly. I had 400 kids that come through an audition, and we narrowed down to 100. So
you narrowed it down to 100?
Narrowed down to 100, yes.
Oh, how many do you need?
That's it. We need 100, yeah.
You need 100?
Well, I mean, you could do it with very few kids, but we decided 100 was the cap.
Oh, that's very sweet.
Yes.
So 100 kids will get a shot,
yes,
right?
Exactly.
That's great. So, okay. So did everybody in the school audition?
No. They had a choice audition, of course.
Okay. So then do you remember what made you think you might want to do this? Or?
Well, I loved music class. You know, I loved.
Oh, yes. And there was singing in the Glum
Bunny.
Of course.
So, yes. So when they invited people to read, whatever characters you wanted to read for you, got the one line to read, like everybody else, just like we did. It's just so full circle for me recently.
Wow.
You know, to be like that in the school system. So.
And so, you know, as you're on the other side of it now, you can see some kids just have it, right?
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah, that kid has it.
Has it, right.
Yeah.
And that was what they must have thought of you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So we have Glum Bunny at 8, right?
Yes.
And this is powerful for you. This says, gee, I like this. This
right.
is good. I want, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then are there a lot more plays in elementary school, in junior high school? Or?
Not so many plays and things like that, but I was always creating something, be it a backyard carnival or a show on my back porch. Or,
really?
Yes.
With other kids, just by yourself?
My best girlfriend down the street, I always drag her and her sister into something.
So you were
parades in the street, whatever.
So you were directing from an early
yes,
age.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
No, it's really the truth.
It's
I mean,
true.
You do.
Yeah.
You get that early impetus to do this thing,
mm-hmm.
and you learn a lot from doing it when it doesn't matter
exactly.
and when you're a kid,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't think people realize the importance of the arts and things like that in children.
No, yes, I'm sure that's
and
right.
And how much it really does help with confidence and oral skills and
mm-hmm.
things like that.
And social skills.
Yes, social skills.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think that's right.
Understanding other people, understanding other character types. And
learning how to work with other people.
All of those
things. All those things, right. I'm sure, I know that that's true, and I also agree that the world doesn't get it.
They don't. And it's unfortunate.
It definitely is. Okay, so... So, all right, junior high school, high school, have you said to yourself and or your parents, this is what I want to do, be?
They supported me in certain ways. I grew up in a very religious home.
Mm.
So I went to a private Christian school in my middle school years, and it was mostly about piano then. And as discovery began to happen for me, they realized that I needed more musical and theatrical experience. So I moved to a different private school.
Wait, I'm curious about. Oh, I'm
yes.
really curious about this. The first Christian school
mm-hmm.
Didn't have wouldn't have given you an opportunity to explore that?
They did, but on a more, church music and a very close box to choose from. You know?
Yeah, I got
it. Of course, I was working in the church and playing piano for them. I was working with a children's group, creating children's Christian musicals.
Right.
And
so how did you know you wanted a larger palette, and how did your parents know that, and how did they... I mean, I'm assuming they sent you to this school because they had some belief in its validity. I mean, it's an interesting...
Well, they wanted to keep me in private school and keep me in... at least a more spiritual atmosphere. So it was what
I. So you went home and said, "Listen, I need to play rock and roll." I mean, you know, I want to know.
I don't really recall what was really made the transition, but I know like the other private school had a marching band.
Yeah. And, no, I understand that it had this stuff. It's just interesting to me. It says a number of things. Mm-hmm. First of all, that you were aware of an eagerness to expand, right? Mm-hmm. And that you either felt comfortable enough to say this to your parents, or they somehow saw it.
Right.
It's not that common, this thing. I mean, what you did and what happened to you and what they let happen. Do you understand what I'm saying?
I think so.
Yeah. Okay, fine. So, another religious school, but a religious school with more stuff that you could get involved
exactly.
in.
Exactly.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and how old are you now?
16, 17, 18.
So you do your last couple of years at the Catholic school.
I graduated from the Catholic school with marching band, and I discovered a choreography group, a performing, kind of like a glee,
mm-hmm.
very much like that, a troupe like that. And
immediately, in the school?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I came in as a pianist, but I wasn't quite sight reading fast enough. I played a lot of classical music, but not pop music. So I got thrown into the group, which is really just juniors and seniors in here. I was a sophomore. So I had to fight my way in a little bit, and I just was picking up so fast. I became a part of the troupe real fast. The next year, the teacher went away, and I became the choreographer because new kids came in, and there was real direction. The new teacher came in, wasn't really aware of choreography or that kind of group, so I kind of became a leader right away my junior and senior year of high school, and then ran off to Oral Roberts University.
Really?
Yes, that was a lot, of course, at my parents' urging, but there I was immediately in a large choir of about 120,
wow.
150, singing with the big concerts and what do you call them, the revivals and things that Oral would do, you know, nationwide. That was quite an experience, getting these huge events.
Right. And you're still quite young.
Yes. And immediately I could tell that I was being groomed to be one of the 12 TV singers.
Oh, my God.
Yes. That was an interesting experience, being pulled in out of all these 150 people to record with the existing TV singers, 12 of us with the other 12, a number of times through my first year. So I could tell I was being groomed, but Oral Roberts University was not the school for me. For a number of reasons, I was in a lot of discovery of myself, and it was just time to move away from there. I was looking at music education, being a teacher, and
You're still trying to fit.
Yes, exactly. Right? Still
You're
trying
still
to find
trying to be a good boy.
I thought I was going to be a teacher.
Yes.
And I was like, oh, it just doesn't make enough money. So instead I choose to be an actor.
Oh, yes.
Which makes a lot more money.
I know. And is so much more stable and has so much more support from the...
Oh, yes.
Right.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Much more stability.
Right. It is interesting, of course, Jared, that given the life that you have described up till now...
Right.
Right. You know, you don't know why, right?
No.
No, we never do.
Right.
We never do. But... But, okay, so what is, I think what you're saying is that there was something of a dichotomy between what your history was, what your family was leading you to, what
yes.
you were trying to do to make them
mm-hmm.
happy, and some stuff that you were discovering
for
about
myself.
Who you are.
Of course,
right?
Which, you know, what the 20s are all about.
Well, that's right.
You know,
right.
Relearning, making your own choices.
A lot of people
yes.
don't.
Of course,
you know.
Of course, they get stuck in what they were taught to begin with.
That's
so
right.
That was definitely self-discovery, and I came home for a short period and rediscovered a new college called Shenandoah University, or it was Shenandoah Conservatory at the time, in Winchester, Virginia. I met an actress that I was very impressed with, and a friend that I had known for a number of years in high school that had also made a choice to go there. And could talk nothing but great things about the school. So I chose to go there, and it was almost like starting over. I carried a lot of credits, but mostly experience. And just learned a great deal there, graduated.
What did you major in?
Music and theater. I have a bachelor's degree in both.
And I'm just curious, what did your parents say? You're saying bye-bye oral
yes,
commerce.
Yes, exactly. That was, it was a definite transition. I thought my mother would be the supportive one and my father would be the angry one. In reality, it was quite the reverse.
Wow.
And it took some time. And, you know, our relationship changing.
Yes, and, growing up.
Of course, growing
not,
up.
Not your little baby boy
and,
anymore.
But they supported me. They helped send me to college there. And I have to give them credit. No matter what their questions were, they've always supported and could tell, you know, that that's what I was born to do.
Yeah, it's a wonderful story, actually. So many parents can't do that. They've got an ID fix about what it means to be the
It
good.
Was a struggle through our whole relationship that, you know, they just don't understand theater.
Right.
You know, they come and support me, but you know, after the show it's over, oh, it was good.
Yeah, right.
Some kind of feedback, you know, theater's supposed to make you think, and it just never that for them.
No.
You know?
No. Yeah. And so you're kind of an anomaly in your family. You're kind
yes.
of a, right? You
yeah.
don't, yeah. Quite often, I think, actors, directors, writers, musicians find that they're somehow different from,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
And what about your sisters and brothers? Do they understand this? Do they like it? Or do they think you're silly?
It's pretty much the same kind of thing.
Because they took the company line.
Yes, of course.
Right,
mm-hmm.
right.
Yeah.
Yes, well,
but
good for you.
Support, yes.
Good for you. I mean, truly, the theme of the Lynn Show is discovering those aspects of yourself for which you may have been in denial and recovering them and using them, because so many people are unable to do what you did, especially young, you know. So good for you.
Thank you.
So okay, you. So you came out of Shenandoah University or conservatory
yes.
at 21.
Oh no, I wasted a couple
no,
extra
you didn't,
years.
You didn't waste
well,
anything.
Well, yes, it took
right,
me
right.
a little extra time.
Right.
To
so you're 25.
So probably about 25.
Right, and you've 25. Got a BA in theater uh-huh. and a BA in music.
Yes.
And then you enter the big white world.
Enter the big white
and
world.
And you
yeah.
say, okay, now what?
Now what? Yes. I got my first professional show back here in Florida at the Gainesville at the Hippodrome, and soon moved to Orlando.
Oh, so you got work pretty
yep,
quickly.
Pretty quick. And then I went to Disney. I spent a good couple of years there, mostly as a part-time. I didn't want to be there full-time. Bouncing around trying to figure out where to go.
Mm-hmm.
I Fort Lauderdale for a short time until I ended up in New York City.
Aha!
Yes. So, you know, a number of shows here and there, and then I spent time in New York City.
How, when is this?
New York's probably 92, 93.
Mm.
And of course, New York's is a tough town.
And where did you come from?
I'm here. I'm a Florida boy.
Oh, you're a Florida boy.
Yeah,
oh,
born
yes,
here,
right.
Straight across the state in Port St. Lucie, Stewart area.
I see.
Right
yes,
across
well, very different New York.
Yes, very yeah. different. And someplace I never thought I would be. But immediately fell in love with the city and... as the city does, it pulls you in, and you either have to go with a purpose and be there or have a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. A friend of mine says, you know, unless you want to be a star, there's no point in living in New York City, you know.
Exactly,
and because it's,
I agree.
Yeah,
or
right.
you have some reason to,
you have a reason,
reason
to be there.
Real
right?
reason
a reason
to be there.
That New York can give you.
Yes.
Right?
It's a great city. I loved a lot about it, but I got lost. There.
Yeah.
You know, I think, and looking in reverse now, too, I think this is the support of my family. I think still questioning what it is that made me question myself.
Yes, and you have to be able to go for it.
Absolutely.
Right, you can't be questioning it because...
It's a tough business.
It's a tough business, and everybody else is going for it.
And everybody else is going for
and
it.
And the questioning shows.
Exactly.
Even though you don't mean it. Right,
exactly.
You know.
You have to at least appear
That's right.
confident.
And it's very hard to do if you are not.
Exactly.
You know, if you don't come with all that support coming through you, right?
Exactly.
It's what we were talking about when you were talking about the kids. They see it. You see it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if somebody is truly completely committed and there, it's demonstrated, right?
It's yes. It's what I say to my actors as a director.
Mm-hmm.
You have to believe it first.
Yes.
Because if you don't believe it, then we don't believe it.
That's right.
So you know. It's your confidence. It's what you, you know, if you go out there and have any doubt, then they're going to have doubts about you.
That's right. And so of course,
you just have to live it.
Right. And you were, That's the it's a mixed blessing, kind of what your family did for you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because they loved you so much, mm-hmm. so they supported you, but they also gave you the "Are you sure?"
Mm-hmm.
you know. Okay, so you were. Did you say you were in a couple of shows in New York?
No, I auditioned a few times, and I did. As you find in New York, most of the work takes you out of the city.
That's right.
Out of the city, and, yes, if you can get it.
Right.
So I went out of the city a few times. And then I took a job with a company called Restaurant Associates, which is the number one corporate catering company in the city.
Mm-hmm.
And within 6 months, they picked me out of hundreds of people to become a captain or a manager.
Mm-hmm.
And the pay was so good. You know, in New York, you know, money is good.
Oh, yeah.
So I decided to, I took the job, and I loved it for a while because the money was good. The hours were what I wanted to make it. And I was running these huge events all over the city, so I got to meet tons of people. And, of course, most people in catering or waiters are
right.
actors anyway.
That's right.
So you're meeting people, a lot of people in your
in
business
the theater, right.
as well. So, of course, then all the unhappy ones are the ones that aren't getting work.
Yeah, right.
So we could all be unhappy together and make lots of money. So it was when I realized that I was hating it, and I was like, I'm not doing what I wanted to be doing. It wasn't until I left the city that I realized that that experience really taught me a lot more about myself and gave me the confidence mm-hmm. that I had been looking for all along.
Right, right, right.
Because here I'm standing in the middle of the opera house, the Metropolitan Opera House, with every person that has all the money that runs all these places, you know, and you're running the event.
Yeah.
You know, you're in the middle. You're taking care of the client, the guests and these 150 waiters that have to be happy setting it up, serving, and then tearing it all down.
Yes. More directing.
Exactly. It made me a much better director.
Yes.
That's what and a much more confident person.
It's ironic. I mean, you keep getting into these situations, even from the beginning with your friend and her sister, where you're directing, essentially.
Exactly.
Go here, do this, don't do that.
So I guess kind of maybe jumping ahead a bit, but I think that's why I believe my acting career is starting to change a lot, and I'm really moving to directing a lot more. I enjoy it more. I don't miss the onstage work as much. I mean, I've done years of it.
Yeah.
I'll never stop because you want to keep up with your craft, of course. But
right.
I really enjoy the directing much more now.
Yeah, well, and it does sound like it was natural to you from the beginning, essentially.
Mm, yes.
You know, and everybody saw it. You know, that's what they saw in you. They kept saying, yeah, you direct.
That's
you
life, do isn't it? Everybody sees what you're supposed to be or who you are,
yes.
who you're going to become.
Whether you do or not.
You have to discover it for yourself. Exactly. Yes.
God, you want to say that again?
I don't know that I could.
It's all right. I have it on tape.
All right. Yeah, rewind.
That's great. Okay, so you decided this job was very nice, but it was a transition.
Yes.
And so what did you do?
I left the city, and I went to Key West.
Oh my!
Yes, and I just kind of hung there for a year. Although I did build a couple of reviews and things down there, probably got into a lot more trouble than I want to admit. deciding what I was wanting to do next, so I just spun my wheels there for a good year. And a friend of mine from New York had called me back and had a project that he was forwarding and wanted me to be his assistant. And it was called Decades. It was called 20 Years of AIDS.
Mm.
That was when right after, I guess it was 2001, actually. AIDS had been discovered 20 years before. So President Clinton had just not become the president. Bush had become president. So we were reaching out to all these large, you know, very present individuals, Bette Midler and Bruce Vilanch and President Clinton, and they were all coming to this event. They had just started to sign on, and the event was happening in November and at the Manhattan City Center. It was very exciting. I thought, I've found what I'm to do
my
is
niche,
build these
right.
events.
Right.
And 9/11 happened.
Oh, yeah.
Which, of course, you know,
destroyed everything. Yeah.
And to be in the city on the day, you know, and having just come up out of the subway that had just gone under the tower 10 minutes before it fell. I come out of the subway and people are running screaming, the tower fell. And I was like, what are you talking about?
God.
So that crazy day, and it was not soon, of course, after that, that I decided I'm out of here. The city will never be the same, at least for me, and will never be the same for me.
Right.
So, and my father's health was decreasing, so I was deciding going back to Florida where it's warm. I hate the winter anyway, and I came back to Florida and, again, tried to figure out for another year what it is I was going to do. And eventually ended up in Orlando, mm-hmm. and I went back to acting, and I was doing two musicals, and a hurricane came through. Wilma and all those good hurricanes that came through that year, and closed the theater.
God.
But it's what spawned me to audition for Chicago here at the Golden Apple, November of 2004.
Oh, with Bill Hayes?
Yeah. Oh, Bill Hayes actually did the revival with us.
Ah. Uh-huh.
The first time.
I didn't see the first one.
The first one was in 2004, and it's such an experience because all the people that we ended up doing that show have become all of my friends. They're just like long-term friends. It's
wow.
Like all these people that came from everywhere, and I met my partner at the, there, oh, and I've never left.
Mm-hmm.
So I've just been here making
and
a living.
And see, here you are, making a living.
Making a living.
Here, exactly. There, and everywhere. All right. Okay. So I would like you to talk a little bit about the Full Monty, and also, if you have a philosophy of directing, what you think the good director does, what you think you're doing when you direct?
As a director, you're there to have the vision. You know, somebody has to have the whole picture. And you have to guide those people into your picture. Although, you have to realize that it is a collaboration. So, you're never going to get exactly what you want or what you see in your head. So first of all, you have to be open to that collaboration. You want to guide people onto a same concept, an idea of what you're trying to have your audience come to an understanding of.
So could you say...
concept.
Yeah, yeah, no, I understand.
Yeah.
So could you say what the concept for the Full Monty is?
No.
No?
I kind of like to keep that to myself.
Oh, all right,
the audience
okay.
makes
yeah, yeah,
their
yeah,
own
okay. all right.
assessment. I don't
okay.
know that I necessarily even share that specific idea with my production team unless I feel like it's necessary.
Yeah, yeah.
With Tommy, that I directed here, which was a huge success.
And wonderful. Oh, my God.
Well, that came out of my toes.
Oh,
that's
my
something I did
God.
8 years ago, and I've been as an assistant director and choreographer. So I had my own ideas and my own vision. Of course, that's a very good example of a show that I had very specific ideas for. And when you're on a budget,
mm-hmm. oh
and,
yeah, right.
You know, you're working with somebody else with other ideas. How do you formulate those two and make them one idea?
Right.
So that
well,
was,
you, well, I think you did it in Tommy. I'll tell you.
Thank
oh
you.
My God, it was amazing.
There are still things that I wish that could have been done, you know, or would have been done. But all in all, I was very, very pleased with the
yeah.
with the outcome.
And so were everyone else, right?
Full Monty is such a great script to begin with. It's written well. The music is so fun.
It's wonderful. It's a great score. And speaking of that, you don't have a CD of the score, do you?
Not with me.
Could I have one?
Sure, I'll get you one.
Because I like to play music from the
sure.
show when I do. I'll do this.
Yeah, sure.
Good. Okay.
But the music is so great. The characters, and by the end, you're cheering for them to take
yeah.
it all
yeah,
off.
Right, right, yeah, right, 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 right.
It's just so well written. I did it when we did it over at the Golden Apple.
Oh, yeah?
A number, about 6 years ago. I played Kino, the stripper. I was also about 30 pounds lighter. And I had been eating a lot of chicken and protein shakes for a good 2 to 3 months before.
I needed a lot of energy, too. Oh, my God.
Just, you know, wanted to look good.
He's yeah,
the very first thing you see is the stripper. Mm-hmm. And to me, it immediately sets you up. You know, this is a strip show.
Oh, right.
You know, people are going to strip. They're going to take off your clothes. Here
it is. Right.
Exactly. Right in the beginning.
Right,
so
right, right.
You already know what you're out for. So
right.
The shock value is already
yes.
set you up. So by the end,
you're ready
you're
for
ready
it.
You're ready for it.
Yeah,
exactly.
yeah. So is this production that you're directing very different from the one you were in?
I'll say it's probably very similar because it, like a chorus line or some of the other shows you see, almost has a Bible.
It has. I was just going to say it has a Bible,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's pretty specific. It's pretty basic.
Right, right. Yeah. It's been done.
Mm-hmm.
And
people expect to see us.
Right, and in some of these things, it's a question of it ain't broke, you know, don't fix it.
Exactly.
it'll work. All right, that's great. Okay, so the other question I ask is, would you think just a little bit about what it's been like to have dedicated a life to this work? And if there's anything you want to say about that, what it's like to have, well, in your case and for a lot of people, to have gone off in a direction which was not the direction in which you were pointed to begin,
mm-hmm.
And then to have gone off into this thing which, you know, theater, it's such a mixed blessing.
It is.
You know. So anything that you might want to say about that?
Happiness comes from within.
Aha! Yes.
It is what I love most. It is what motivates me. It's what drives me. If it weren't for that, I'd want to stay in bed.
Yes.
Because there's many days that I'm tired, or some days it's just work.
Mm-hmm.
But if I didn't love it, you know, what would I do?
Yes. Yeah. That's a great place to stop. Thank you very much.
A pleasure. Derek. A pleasure.
Happiness comes from within. It is what I love most. It's what motivates me and what drives me. And if I didn't do it, I would just want to stay in bed. Spoken like a person who is deeply connected to who he is, and therefore doing what he needs to do for himself. And as you heard, this was not necessarily an easy decision, not the decision that might have been chosen for him by the people who loved him and who he loved. And of course, for me, this makes the point again and again and again. And it's the reason that I interview people who give their life to an art, to make the point that who you were told you were, who you were told you had to be, even who you decided you had to be, or even who you decided you were, is not necessarily the end of the story. And if it's not working for you, then there may definitely be a person inside of you who's yearning to get out, yearning to be dedicated to what you love and who you are. And as I said in the beginning, the first thing is to ask the question, am I satisfied with my life? Do I feel like I am who I am, or who I was meant to be, or who I might have been? Just ask the question. And of course, if you want more information about that, as I said at the beginning, there is a lot of that information up on my website, or you can email me and ask me a question. So now, we're going to go out on another amazing tune from the Full Monty, which I hope you will run down and see. But before that, I need to thank Josh Hackney, as I do every week, because I couldn't do this show without Josh, for all of the reasons, because he found the software I am currently using and then taught me to use it. Because I keep forgetting how to do things and Josh comes to my rescue, because I want to upload things that I can't find, and when I can find them, I can't figure out how to put them on the website, but Josh can, because he's kind and generous and never rubs my nose in the fact that he's taught me this a number of times and he's teaching it to me again. So, if you need or want help with computers, recording, electronics, or you just want to have a nice friend, you want Josh Hackney. And you can get him also at my website, thelynshow.com, thelynneshow. So, as always, I hope that you heard something that you can use in this show. Something that amused you or turned you on or started you thinking about something important for you, something that'll bring you back, because, as always, I will be back next week, same time, same station, and as always, I hope you will be, too.
Let's find a rock, I mean a big-ass rock, or maybe something like a cinder block is better. I'll hoist it up and drop it on your face, my buddy. And just before the lights go out, you'll see my smile and you'll know you've got a friend with a rock. Who cares? I mean a big-ass rock or rope. I got some quality rope made for a man who's devoid of hope like you are, my buddy, Michael.
Oh, that's Malcolm?
Yeah, Malcolm, right. And I won't leave you swinging there, twitching like a fish while you claw the air. I'll grab your feet and pal of mine, I'll pull real hard and snap your spinal cord. This world is cold when you're alone and they ignore you, but don't kill yourself, we'll do it for you. Got a friend. You've got a friend.
You've got a friend.
Yeah. You know, I asked a guy once if he'd mind putting me in a barrel, sending me over the falls. You know what the son of a bitch said? Drop dead, asshole.
People are pricks.
Well,
I asked this guy to take his air compressor and drill me with a 6-inch nail right through the eye.
What'd he say?
I'm low on nails.
People are selfish pricks.
You know, another time, now get this. I laid down in front of a steamroller and asked the guy just to proceed, you know, business as usual, and just squash me like a bug.
That's a good way to go, Jerry, old bug squash. Hey, we could tie a plastic laundry bag over his head.
Nah, oh, that's such a wimp suicide.
I stuck my finger in a socket once, hurt real bad. But it didn't kill me.
Malcolm, stay out of this.
I've got a friend like Carole King, or was it Carly Simon used to sing? I always get those two confused. But anyway, I turned around and suddenly I'm not alone, it ain't just me. I'm like a player on the team. Part of the gang.
Let's get a club.
I like the big ass rock.
Ah, one good swing and I'll clean his clock forever.
Let gravity do the work.
It's a man's way to die, Mikey.
Malcolm!
I've got friends.
Friends who will love you like a maniac. And lead you like a lamb to the railroad track. And tie you down.
I've got friends.
Tickle your wrist with a single edge razor. Or buy you a beer with a train. Or dump you in the river with a rock.
A big-ass rock.
There's a nice one right over here.
Hey, can I give you a hand with that? Looks heavy.
No, Dave. It ain't heavy. He's my friend.
Come on. Group hug.
See, I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you say my face and figure have both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring. I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Thank you. my shot. My time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage? Let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle.